Try again.
Great.
If you live in kitchen streets, here are the people you would meet. Here are the people who would share the songs, the songs we have. In kitchen street, the wings beat. Kitchen street, the wings beat. To live in
Season 3, episode 15. Johnny was just coming around the corner. Who's that behind him? It's Ack. I can see Ack. And there's Amy Bradshaw just following him. Right at the back there's Matthew Revelle. Oh, Matthew Revelle! He's making a last challenge! Here he comes! He's come to the front! Yes! He's a clear winner!
Oh, I thought I was coming up the rear. Anyway, so here we are, season 3, episode 15 of Lug Radio. I'm Matthew Revelle.
Jesus, I'm knackered
now. That's the ill man,
sick,
Bradshaw.
Sick boy.
I'm Jonah Bacon.
And I'm Stuart Langridge.
Welcome to the show.
Yes, it's going to be a right rollicking one tonight.
It's a right rollicking adventure of roller coaster proportions.
Mystery segment.
We have.
Where is this mystery you speak
of? Or will be revealed later.
Will be speaking.
Beautiful.
1 year on to Kevin Carmody of Lytton Spire.
Kevin, yeah. The smile, Carmody.
I pop the question.
Well, not literally.
What Kevin Carmody of Lytton Spire?
What would happen if Microsoft open source their software?
You did pop such a question.
We did, and we gave
and we pontificated.
Such an answer.
We will. We will pop such a question.
No. People know. Okay. I think that boat has sailed, to be honest.
You're feeling pretty ill tonight, aren't you?
I am.
You're feeling pretty ill. You've got some kind of virus, haven't you?
Yeah.
Some kind of bug.
Yes. And it's platform independent.
Let's talk
analogy
about
it. Analogy starts to run out at this point.
Surely HN51's independent of platform, isn't it?
You're saying I've got bird flu.
Well, you
you're
know.
Growing a pear. That was going really well there for a minute.
I wasn't sure about the first bit. The other day there was a proof of concept code released for a virus that affected both Linux and Windows.
Cool.
Okay.
I mean, you know, not cool.
Well, interesting.
Entirely not cool at all, in fact.
Well, actually, I don't fucking care.
Now, there was a bug in the Linux kernel that prevented it working quite so well on the Linux side.
Right, okay.
So Linus...
Ah, virus writers. Our kernel's too buggy for you.
So Linus found a bug and fixed it. Now, I was just wondering if you think he did the right thing there.
Yes.
What did
yes.
the bug do other than that? What else did
I
it
I don't actually know, because it's quite interesting that bug hasn't seen the light of day until this proof of concept code came out.
Until this exposed about. I mean, I got the impression at least that it was an actual bug. It was supposed to work in way X. And the virus assumed it worked in way X, and it wasn't. So it was working in a different way.
Absolutely
so
right.
So he fixed it
yeah.
to work like it was documented to do.
Yeah, and the byproduct of that was the virus was more effective. I mean, not hugely effective, but it's still only a proof of concept code.
But the question you're asking is, should Linus have fixed the bug knowing full well that this was probably going to allow this virus to go rampant?
/discuss.
But yes, he should have done.
I agree with you. This is going to be a very short
segment. It's going to be a short segment.
I'm just devil's advocacy here.
Yeah.
Why should he have not gone, well, no one else is relying on it because he didn't break anything else. Why not just change the spec, assuming there was a spec for this bit, to say this is going to work a different way?
Well, that, first of all, immediately assumes that it's sensible to change the spec. The other thing is that...
I'm assuming it wasn't anything... I mean, I don't know that much about what the bug was.
None of us do. But you're not alone.
I'm assuming it didn't do anything fundamental like controlled writing to disk, or someone would have noticed it before this virus came out.
Yeah. Someone would have noticed that bug, wouldn't they?
Well, the thing is, first of all, it was a bug, so it should have been fixed. But secondly, proof of concept stuff really is just to help us... harden our defences.
Yeah.
If proof of concept stuff can exploit stuff, then you've got to believe black hat people already know about this. And
yeah,
the thing is, the minute you start...
On the other hand, it's not helping us harden our defence. This proof of concept thing is helping us lower our defences.
Well, no, not really. Well, that's what you mean.
Because there was a virus before that didn't work, and now it does work.
The thing is, when you start saying, oh, we're not going to fix this bug because it might cause this bad thing to happen, or might not fix this bug, that's when... it starts turning into a less than stable operating system.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're going to try and say Program X ought to be able to run, but Program Y, which basically does the same thing, should not be able to run, and try and control that at kernel level, it's going to blow up.
Any kind of
you've got to export one stable interface.
Yeah, exactly. And any kind of specific hacks around that must be a bad thing. I mean, I don't know anything about kernel hacking, but it must be a bad thing to have this kind
of... No, I agree, but I mean, it kicked off a huge discussion on the internet, and there were a lot of people saying that he shouldn't have fixed it. And
I think
all of us would have been screaming at the screen saying, yes, he should.
Linus Torvalds could have had a shit in the garden, it would have kicked off a massive discussion on the internet.
Well, he would, actually.
Especially with the photos.
Especially if it was someone else's garden. Question for you.
Yes.
If there was something, a programming API or something that you could make a computer do that in practice nobody used apart from viruses.
Yeah.
But it could conceivably be useful, but in practice nobody used apart from viruses. Should you implement it?
Ah, fuck it, no.
No, I mean, that's like being able to attach to your address book in Outlook and send emails. In practice, other programs could use it and they could find it useful, but, you know, in theory other programs could use it, but in practice nobody did it apart from virus, right? So Microsoft made it bloody difficult.
Yeah.
And was that the right thing to do?
So, we're all in agreement.
Pretty much. I don't really have
an opinion. That's the first time ever, I think.
Mike Kevin, it's Lug Radio here. How you doing?
Hey. Good, doing great.
We thought we'd give you a call. It's about a year since we last spoke to you, roughly anyway. And obviously a lot's happened since then, one of those things being FreeSpire. Could you just sum up generally what FreeSpire is all about for us?
Well, first I want to comment on the most important thing that happened since we last talked, and that was I actually got to meet all you guys.
Yeah.
Live show there over in the UK.
That's true.
So at least now when I'm talking to you, I kind of have a better sense who I'm talking to. FreeSpire. Well, let's see. We've been doing Linspire for about 5 years now, and about 3 years into this, so about 2 years ago, we decided it was time to start working on a community version of Linspire, you know, a free download and get the community involved. And we didn't do it in the earliest first days of Linspire. We wanted to make sure we had a business model and a business that was going to be around. You know, you get a lot of community projects that start and then they go away. So a few years into it, we said, okay, the model seems to be working. Let's now open it up. But it's taken us a couple years to get around to it. And to be honest, the timing is probably about right anyway. Given the nature of how we're doing FreeSpire by incorporating proprietary codecs as an option, I think even a couple years ago, you know, we may have come up against more resistance. But I think today, the community is understanding that that's a kind of a bit of a compromise that probably makes sense making until there are, you know, alternatives available.
Why is FreeSpire important then to Linspire? I mean, obviously Linspire has in the past proven that you are about giving back to the community where you can. But why go out and out and do a community distro when you already have a commercial distro available?
Right. I think a lot of reasons. You know, there's the obvious one to help get some development revolving around the Linspire format and kind of the vision of what Linspire is trying to do. For example, I think traditional Linux projects, they tend to go to a, you know, kind of the Linux development crowd. I think FreeSpire, because of its roots coming from Linspire, our hope is it'll attract a lot of Windows developers. And as many Linux developers as there are, for every one Linux developer, there's probably 100 Windows developers. And, you know, I have a lot of friends that are Windows developers, and I say to them, how come you guys don't write software for Linux? And they always look at me funny, and they say, why would we waste our time doing that? And I'm not trying to be rude, but that's what they say to me. They have two problems with it. The first problem they have is they go, nobody uses it on the desktop. And these are like desktop application developers. They say, hey, nobody's really running it on the desktop. Server's awesome, great, love it. Desktop, there'd be no market for our wares, so why bother? And then the second thing that they tell me is, and then there's really kind of no place to distribute and market my wares that's kind of a friendly, easy way to get their hands on, you know, versus, you know, download and compile or this and that. So I think the CNR model and the Linspire's kind of tapping and going after the Windows market is something that appeals to them. So there's one reason, is try to get more developers to become part of this ecosystem. I think another important reason is that what we found over the last 5 years is as companies or even OEMs are making decisions based on, you know, which distribution to use, you know, a lot of them, they start with Linspire because they've heard all these great things about it. They know that we're in the OEM channel. They know that we're easy to use.
Right,
but then
yeah.
as soon as they get to the kind of the QA process and they bring their engineers all start saying, oh, you should be using Mandriva or you should be using Ubuntu or you should be using SUSE. And because these projects have more of a technical offering, then a lot of these technical people are more used to those distributions. And so they kind of picture Linspire as the Linux with training wheels, and they don't always think of that. So the salespeople and the marketing people and the people who have to support it, they all love Linspire, but kind of the hardcore geeks within these organizations, sometimes they're not as familiar with Linspire. So we're hoping that they'll get familiar with FreeSpire, and they'll go, wow, okay, we kind of dig this FreeSpire thing. And if you're saying Linspire is just kind of the even easier, still consumer version of this, I can see why Dell and HP and guys would want to pre-install it.
Now, since the announcement of FreeSpire, I think it's fair to say that it's caused some divide in terms of what people think about this move, what people think about FreeSpire.
Right.
Now, some people, some of the cynics, and playing devil's advocate here, some of the cynics have said this is Linspire's attempt to basically cajole together a community. It's all a facade. None of this is actually going to happen. What would you counter that argument with?
Well, first of all, I'll give you my data point, because obviously, you know, I've talked to tons of people since the announcement, be it with the press, the media, lots of emails, our forums, the FreeSpire forums. I would say there's a bit of a divide, but it's about 95% one way and 5% the other way.
Yeah.
I think had we done this a couple years ago, it probably would have been maybe 50-50. So overwhelmingly, I'm getting a tremendous amount of positive remarks and comments from the people I speak with. One reason I think it's a lot more positive, I think they've seen in the last year that I've been a little bit more community-focused, and I've been a little bit more open with the community. That's just kind of my leadership style, as opposed to where we were in the first few years. So I think a lot of the cynicism and skeptical nature that people have towards Linspire has kind of started to go away anyway.
Okay. One brief interruption.
All I can say is keep your eye on us, watch us. I know from internally, we are 100%. We've been saying this now for a while. This is the year of FreeSpire. We never even talk about Linspire here much these days. Obviously, our salespeople who have OEM deals and whatnot, they're still dealing with it. But from a development and even an executive standpoint, it's all about FreeSpire, and that will remain so for quite some time.
Okay. I mean, a quick thing there. I once heard a story that the Queen, this is the Queen of England, thinks that the whole world smells like fresh paint, because every time she goes somewhere, they paint it 5 minutes before she arrives. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're saying that 95% of what you see is in favour of Linspire and what they're doing with FreeSpire and everything. But is that because you're Kevin Carmody, CEO of Linspire?
Well, I read the same articles. I mean, you can go to Google and click on the news tab and type FreeSpire and read all the stories that are being written. I think the only really critical one was from Grok Law from PJ, and other than that, I haven't seen really anything out there that's too. Oh, obviously Slashdot. You know, you give away $1,000, and people are going to be critical at Slashdot.
No doubt.
I think, and the other thing I'll mention is, before we even launched FreeSpire, we made a list of 100 very critical key people that we thought could be skeptical, be it, you know, or could be positive, could be favorable, could be negative.
And you had to pull them off, right?
Three important people. Jono, you were on that list. And so even before we announced it, we disclosed to all of these people all the FAQs, some quite a bit of detailed information of what we were doing. And we used a lot of that, and we vetted a lot of this stuff out so that even by the time we announced it, it had already been vetted through IBM, Intel, Dell, HP, Jono, you know, other people out in the out in the community. And so I think we did our homework, and I think we hit a project that, you know, can be accepted and can have some value.
So a quick question then. What's not in FreeSpire that is in Linspire? I mean, what don't you get?
The main difference is just kind of the, you know, Linspire really does put those training wheels on. With FreeSpire, we take the training wheels off.
Okay.
You can always lift the hood with Linspire to this day. I mean, it's Debian Linux under the hood purring away. But with Linspire, we put the tutorials in. We put a different theme in there. We put a fit and finish, a consumer. You know, we hide things that would scare a new user. I'll give you an example. On Linspire, the desktop, you know, to switch between desktops and the pager, we turned that off in Linspire because we would observe people running Linspire. And this was years ago that we would put new people in front of Linspire and we'd watch them interact. They'd think that was an icon, you know, that little pager with the four boxes.
Yeah.
They just assumed that was some kind of icon. They're like, I wonder what that does. They would click on it and bingo, their desktop disappeared. And they had no clue what just happened and they'd get all confused. So with Linspire, we turn that off. Now, you can turn it back on, and we explain people, hey, once you're getting a little more comfortable, here's how you turn that on. With FreeSpire, we can leave some of those defaults on by nature because it's going to be a little more of a Linux technical crowd.
Okay.
So I think the main difference is we just add that additional layer of ease of use consumer. There's branding. There's support. There's, you know, you can call, pick up the phone and call a salesperson. Whereas
can
FreeSpire,
you still use
you know,
click
there's
and
none of that. It's all a community
can you still,
project.
Can you still use click and run?
Yeah, you definitely will use the, in fact, both Linspire and FreeSpire still use the exact same click and run service.
Sure.
The difference is with FreeSpire, you can also use AppGet. And, you know, and they've asked me, well, should we turn AppGet on for Linspire? And I've always said, I could care less. You know, if it makes it easier to turn it on for Linspire, I mean, don't go out of your way to turn it off for Linspire. Linspire users were always people that really don't know what AppGet is. And that's I don't use AppGet. I mean, to me, that is too technical. I'm not that technical of a person. So I've never worried too much about, you know, if AppGet's available. So with FreeSpire, you can use AppGet. You can AppGet into the same pools that the CNR is coming from, or you can point it to other pools, or you can use CNR.
Kevin, the feeling that I've got from you every time we've spoken to you and I've read comments that you've posted is that it really matters to you what the Linux and free software community think of Linspire. And it, I mean, there are other perhaps more commercially oriented distros out there who don't care. And I think it's, you know, obviously it's great that you do, but with FreeSpire, it seems to be maybe the biggest step so far that Linspire has made to get community recognition and to legitimacy, perhaps. What view do you think the community will have of Linspire as a company, say, in a year's time?
I hope that I hope that through FreeSpire, the community learns to understand what Linspire has been all along. I mean, there's a lot of misconceptions about what Linspire does and who we are. So, for example, if you go to linspire.com/open-source, you will see tons of open source projects that we have dumped millions of dollars into. We've always given our code back. We've propped up and supported financially and otherwise. We're the lead developer and sponsor for NView and LSongs and LFolder and RiserFS and so on. I mean, we do a tremendous amount of good for the community. I think the average Slashdot reader has no idea of that. They just assume we're the evil empire. We're like Microsoft or Linux or something. I'm hoping that FreeSpire, they'll at least take a look, and they'll go, well, it's about time they started giving all their code back. Well, we've always given our code back as open source. Well, it's about time they started contributing to some projects. We've always been contributing to projects. So I think it'll just be helpful in them. We'll be a little more approachable into a way that they're used to looking at things, and I think they'll see a good side of us.
Cool.
I also think Michael Robertson, you know, he really didn't worry so much about the community. I mean, Michael knew, hey, he was going to go straight for the majority market. He was going after the Windows users, and he just kind of blew straight past the community right to the Windows users. What I've realized over the last 5 years, and Michael as well, Michael is 100% supportive of what we're doing with FreeSpire. What we learned is, wait a minute, you can't blow past the early adopters because it's the early adopters who recommend your stuff to the majority market. You know, and I sat in lots of meetings. I sat in a meeting with a very big OEM. These guys were so jazzed about Linspire. They were getting ready to roll out all these Linspire computers. And then we show up for this meeting of many meetings we've had.
Who was it?
And in comes this one technical engineer guy from back in their QA lab, and he's saying, well, he's there to put a wrench in everything because he thinks Linspire is evil and it's closed source and it's all these things. And we had to spend a lot of time explaining to him, no, that's not true. Well, you got the root issue. Well, no, you really don't. You can definitely sign, you can create users, and we had to sit down and show him how it worked.
Okay.
So we had to, you know, answer a lot of questions that hopefully, if he's used FreeSpire, that guy will never even bother coming into the meeting. He'll go, okay, cool, Linspire's the friendlier consumer version of FreeSpire, and FreeSpire's a great distro.
Cool. Can I just ask one very quick question?
Sure.
You may answer none of your business, but is Linspire making money for you guys?
Do we make money today? Are we profitable?
I mean, yeah. Is producing Linux distribution a profitable business for Linspire Inc.?
We have a this is how I would say it. We have a model that we now know works. We are not profitable. We definitely burn money every single month. We still lose money every month. We've spent over $35 million on desktop Linux to date. Fortunately, we have more money to spend, and we're not going anywhere. But we're getting very close to profitability. So, you know, our revenues and our expenses are starting to become a very manageable burn rate. So, you know, in the early days, the burn rate is big, you know, $10 million a year kind of thing. Now our burn rate is very low. So, you know, for a very little amount of money, we can stay in this business for a good long time.
Yeah,
and hopefully,
good.
I'd like to see us in the next 12 to 18 months definitely become profitable. But the more important thing for us, we have a profitable model.
Yeah.
We know if we can get X number of users, we know that we make money and we scale. And you know, so it's like we just now it's just a matter of getting more users, getting
now,
more distribution.
Now, Kevin, about a year ago, we had you on the show. We just, in fact, we were thinking of another segment, and we noticed that you were on the show a year ago.
Uh-huh.
And the last time you were on the show, we were somewhat cynical about Linspire, and you came on the show, and a lot of people impressed by what you said, particularly on the forums, which I think is fair to say.
Yeah.
And you were saying, you know, we donate back to projects and things such as that, and we are good citizens when it comes to open source. And 1 year on, we've now seen FreeSpire be launched, and you know, and all the things that are associated with that. Now, the interesting thing is that there still seems to be quite a lot of cynicism towards Linspire, and quite a lot of suspicion around FreeSpire. And although you were on the show a year ago, and you were saying many of these things, it seems in some ways as if the communication channels still aren't completely clear, as if people are still getting quite confused about what the specific situation is. You know, are things really going to change substantially?
No, absolutely. They again, first of all, I'd say I don't know that they really needed to change. I think if people would have looked at Linspire, they'd say, wait a minute, these guys are doing more for desktop Linux than any company out there. We have 350 OEMs shipping Linux computers today.
Yeah.
You can walk into a Fry's, into a Micro Center, Medion out there in Europe, Miris here in the United States, HP in South Africa. You know, so we're doing a tremendous amount of good, and it's just, I think it was always a communication, and it was an image problem, you know. People just had the wrong image of Linspire because we were going after, you know, the consumer market. The geeks didn't kind of get their hands around it. So so things didn't need to change. I think our trying to communicate more effectively has changed, particularly since I've been CEO in the last year. I tell Heather, our gal that schedules all the interviews and whatnot, she knows I'm available 24/7, anytime, any place to talk to anybody. My email address, kevin@linspire.com, is widely publicized. There is nobody, PJ on Grocklaw, you know, when she was going off at all these terrible things. Here's my email address. Here's my phone number. Please call me. Let's talk about this because I want to clear any misunderstandings up.
Right.
So I think I've tried to be as visible as I can. I think what the real problem is first impressions. They're just terribly difficult to overcome.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You know, it's like look at something like the Mormon Church. They gave up polygamy 100-something years ago.
Yeah.
But the average person assumes Mormons practice polygamy. So if you do something in the early stages and you get kind of bookmarked with that or earmarked with that, it's really tough to shake that sometimes. And we're trying hard, and I think FreeSpire is going to go a long ways towards that. I think we've definitely made progress since a year ago when we spoke. And I think give us another year with FreeSpire. I think that's going to be huge to people understanding. Because now, for free, they can take a look. And they can say, wait a minute, this looks just like my favorite distro, only perhaps maybe even better.
Excellent. Excellent. I mean, thank you for publicizing your email address, and I hope you enjoy all the Nigerian email you get to it. just a quick question around FreeSpire and the leadership board. Now, as we know, Mr. Bacon here is on the leadership board.
Uh-huh.
And apart from the fact that they're all very, obviously, very beautiful and very rich, and they all have big willies and everything, why did you choose the people who are on the leadership board? And what do you expect the leadership board are going to do for FreeSpire?
First of all, the leadership board that's on the website now is only about half of who you're going to see. I think John saw this morning that we just added Kevin Shockey from Tux Magazine. So you're going to see another, you know, set of names added to that leadership board. Who we wanted on there for the leadership board is we said, hey, listen, we don't even care if you use FreeSpire or not. What we want is we want you to believe in the vision.
Mm.
And if you go to the FreeSpire website, it has what the vision is. And there's like six items. We say, this is what we believe this distribution should do. This is what the goals, this is how we view the world.
Yep.
If you believe in that and you have influence and you have a circle of influence, then be part of the leadership board and be the moral compass to make sure we never veer off track of that. There's only one person from LinnSpire on the leadership board, and that's me. And everybody else, you know, I'm trying to find people who were skeptical of what we were doing. And because I want them to, you know, gently and kindly direct us in the right direction so we fulfill our vision.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks,
yes, Kevin.
Appreciate it.
We appreciate your time, and we'll probably speak to you in a year.
Sounds good. And hopefully we won't be talking about our terrible image anymore.
I hope so.
Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work.
Brilliant.
We would love to see you at Lug Radio Live.
Yeah, yeah. Do you fancy coming along to Lug Radio Live? Show your face?
When is it now? when is it next time?
I know we're putting you on the spot now, but the 22nd and 23rd of July in Wolverhampton, the city of dreams.
Is that where I was last time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Better venue.
Yeah, it's a bit
like the center of the universe.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. Better venue, though.
No, I had a great time. Well, send me information, and we'll see. England's one of my absolute favorite places to visit, so it's not hard to convince me to come there.
I'm impressed how you dodged the answer.
Just give us a
well,
yes
I look
or no.
My schedule, but...
No problem.
I'm sure if you can make it, you'll be there. So thanks very much, Kevin.
Exactly. Thanks.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye. So why do people hate LinnSpire? I mean, we touched on that quite a bit in that interview with Kevin.
Yeah. I think he was quite accurate in like the first image that you make of somebody. It's very hard to shake.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we did get the idea of LinnSpire, or Lindos as they were then, coming into the arena and going, hey guys, we're here now, it's all going to be okay. And obviously it didn't quite work out like
this
that.
Is,
well, it felt a bit like
okay.
that.
This is part of the reason, and Ack alluded to this towards the end, which is why I joined the leadership board.
Yeah.
Is that... I don't use FreeSpire, I don't use LinnSpire, and it's unlikely that I ever will.
And let's make it clear, you're not paid to do
that. Yeah, I'm not paid. They asked me, and I don't really have any control or any direction over what they do. It's more of an advisory kind of role.
Yeah.
And part of the reason is because LinnSpire have got this reputation, this less than perfect reputation.
Yeah.
And if you compare them to someone such as Novell,
and it's not really representative of them, is it?
No.
I'd say they get a tough rap, to be honest. Yeah. Whether you like their software, you see, they write software for the AOL generation.
Well, I'm not a huge fan of them, but I do think they get an unfairly bad rap.
None of us are really AOL users, right?
/discuss.
But but there are people who do use AOL, and that's fine. And LinnSpire get a bad rap for it. And I think if you compare their contributions to Novell, they're probably contribute about the same amount, but the Novell guys...
Novell people listen to this going, no, possibly. But I'd say you probably...
I'm not saying this with any kind of statistics.
Maybe right,
but,
yeah.
But the thing is that the contributions that Novell and Red Hat and people like that make, they seem to be able to communicate that better and have that closer relationship
is
with
it
the community.
Do you think, I was just about to say, do you think it's because they are a very... shiny kind of...
Yeah, I suspect
here,
that...
Get your $50 value kind of...
I don't think it is. I think the problem with...
Do you not reckon it is? Because they are very... Can I just quickly...
Yeah, sorry, go on.
My summary of the way that they present themselves is as almost a bit like... sorry, I'm trying to think of an international example. It's not very easy. Mm. But the sort of store or sort of product where it's not so much about the quality of the product, it's more about... how many free things you get with
Coca-Cola.
It. I wouldn't say
this knife gets his entire kitchen set free.
Yeah, there's a bit like the shopping style windows.
The shopping channels do on television.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
And not only do you get his entire kitchen set, but you also
get this free Diamante ring.
And it often feels like it's too good to be true because they present themselves in this shiny kind of almost too clean way.
Yeah.
And you're always thinking if you scratch beneath the surface, it's going to be something horrible. But with Linspire, I think the truth of the matter is that they use that because it works for a certain segment of society, but
which is their audience, really. Yeah,
but they're not actually evil underneath it, perhaps.
I suspect that, you see, their target audience are people who need to be marketed towards. The kind of people
in that way.
The kind of people who
Mac users.
I'd say the majority of people who use Ubuntu or Fedora or OpenSUSE.
If you're about to tell me they didn't get marketed at, then I'd say squeal again.
I'd say that they get marketed at, but they get marketed at in a different way. Off.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
in a different way. Whereas the it's I suppose yeah it's
the benefits the, different benefits are presented in different ways.
You see, and that's the main problem they've got is that they need to communicate better to the community, which is the aim of FreeSpire.
They need to do another whole load of communication. Yeah, you're right.
I think the killer is really that what they like to do is they like to make dramatic plays. They like to sit quietly and then suddenly go, dun dun brand new thing, right?
Yep.
Instead of saying, people, we're developing this brand new thing, here it comes. I mean, and that was the problem when people complained at Novell for going, no X stuff, da-da. XGL, out of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
That was exactly the complaint that everyone levelled at Novell, that they made this big dramatic play to get people's attention. Rather than, you know, the Fedora people went, ARGLX, but you knew it was coming.
Yeah. I think,
you know, and Linspire like that. Part of the problem is that in order to get people's interest, received kind of marketing wisdom, at least some of it, is that you have to make this kind of big splash.
Yeah.
Because if you sort of build it up slowly, people go, oh, I've heard about that, that sounds interesting. And then when they wait 12 months before it happens, they've forgotten about it, or they're bored.
Which is perhaps why FreeSpire / Linspire is going to be a good split, because FreeSpire, they can talk to people like us who expect something... Yeah. More geeky, more community driven. Yeah. Whereas they can still talk to their normal Linspire people in that kind of flashy, boing.
And the thing is, as well, I think the other main thing to bear in mind is, a lot of people who talk about FreeSpire are people in the open source community. I'd say that their audience are not the kind of people who will typically read things to do with the open source community.
They're probably not going to read OS news.
They're going to be the kind of people who use a computer to do their work, which is what Kevin's been talking about. And within the open source community, Linspire are seen as not very cool.
Because they're shiny and buoyant.
Yeah, because they target that for my first computer kind of demographic of people.
Get one free.
And converting over to that kind of community, you know, making people who use Ubuntu and Fedora and OpenSUSE get an idea and use FreeSpire, it's going to be a tough one. So
yeah, and I mean, I think it has plenty of backing to work though. Plenty of examples. I mean, for example, Ford own Volvo, they own Jaguar.
Yeah.
In a way, they're both premium car brands, but they're going for totally different people.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was watching Top Gear the other day.
quality show.
Yep.
Did you have a box of Kleenex with you?
What's it about for international listeners?
No, he wasn't watching Murder, She Wrote.
It's really popular with international listeners as well. But if you don't know, it's a car program about cars. I'm really interested in cars. Top Gear is really interesting. But one of the things they did to make themselves popular, it used to be a really, really boring program where they talked about stats and things. And now it's unashamedly a petrol-head program where they talk about speed and really fast cars like Ferraris, right? And it occurred to me that we do a lot of discussion where we look at both sides of open source and free software and what's important and what's not.
Do we?
We look at both sides. Some people would say that we are...
both sides of the wrong answer.
Unashamedly for Gnome or unashamedly against KDE or for Ubuntu or against Linspire.
They'd be right.
Or whatever. But we don't often just go, this is great. Why? So just tell me why you think free software is good. You know...
Two minutes.
Why do you actually think it's a good idea?
2 minutes each.
Yeah. Why are you here? I'm not looking for. It's really good for the community and for the world because I don't fucking believe anyone actually uses it for that reason. Why do you use it? Why do you think it's good?
I'm surprised.
You
go just
around
said
the
that,
circle.
You know?
2 minutes each.
I'd have thought that's the reason why you use it. In fact.
No. Well.
Because of being the ethical guy that you are, I'd thought. In fact, the reason why you use it because you believe it makes a better world.
It's on my
list. Might as well start with you, as you're the only person with any prior knowledge of this.
That sort of thing's on my list of reasons. Yeah. And I'd like to be able to say, yes, I use it because it improves the world and everything. But I really like it because I can just download software and get it for free. I feel a bit guilty about this.
You mean cost free, yeah?
Yeah, cost free. I can just go, oh, here's some software, brilliant. And then
free
I go,
as in wares.
Yeah, and then I go, oh, now. And while I'm doing this, I'm improving the world, and right. That's really great and everything.
I think we can argue that point.
But if, but well, perhaps you could argue that point, absolutely. But
is it all right to be able to dodgy porn if you're using Firefox? I mean, does that make it ethically okay? I'm not saying that's what you do. I'm just saying.
I think he uses Pornzilla instead.
Oh, is that like this?
Go.
Yeah,
is that
a thing?
Yeah.
Ah.
I've been told.
Busted.
I've beaten
you
off.
Fucking dirty
perv. I think everybody gets into free software because it costs nothing initially. But I think it is the age-old software should be free. You should get the source code.
I mean, that sort of thing is intellectually the right answer to everything.
Yeah, it's not the first
but
thing.
I really like
the fact
that I'll just go and get a computer and then just fucking download Ubuntu and put it on it.
I think it depends when people got into it as well, because I know, particularly in the early days, I spoke to other people about this, and part of the reason why I got into it is because it was just an unknown world.
Yeah,
I'd never done any Unixy type stuff before, so it was a whole new landscape to kind of explore. It was like a really mental video game.
See, when I got into it, I'd been using Solaris at university.
Yeah,
so
right.
I'd done Unix stuff before. I'd used X. I'd used the Unix command line and everything. When I got into Linux, I was vague. I mean, I was familiar with it to the extent that I knew what LS did.
See, it wasn't,
I never did anything massively complicated.
So it wasn't a dramatic leap?
No.
Because you'd already had some
I didn't go from DOS to Linux, Windows to Linux. I went to Solaris, and then a bit of Solaris and a bit of Windows, and when I had Windows up, I was using Telnet anyway, and then I tried running Minix and then Linux. So it was kind of a gradual thing for me anyway.
Let's go through it then. Let's start with Aid, as he's unwell.
What do you think's cool about it? Not just why do you use it, but
I
why
just
is it good?
I love the fact that you get all the source. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that I can look through it and I can spot anything, but the fact that it's all there available to me, and if I want to know if my piece of software is doing something wrong, like dialing home or sending my details somewhere, somebody's looked through the source code, they know that it isn't doing
that. You've
got
that security blanket.
Peace of mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Matthew P. Ravel.
Hello. I got into it because it was something different. I'd always liked running alternative stuff, so I was running OS 2, obviously, on the PC and things like that.
It doesn't get more alternative than that.
And PC. and PC DOS, you know, and for many years I used PCW. But
isn't that a magazine?
Personal Computer World.
It is, yes.
Oh, right.
I've been to their head offices, actually.
Really?
Anyway. Yeah, anyway.
You say you can have a job.
No, I went with work.
I'm really good at LocoScript.
Fuck off. LocoScript 2 was actually quite good. Anyway,
Jeez, I forgot about LocoScript.
So anyway, the first reason was because it was something different. It was an alternative, and I always liked the ideas of alternatives. But
so we've heard.
The alternative lifestyle, eh, man?
Yeah. But I also got into it because around the time I started off with it was all the time of, like, dodgy dialers who were calling premium rate numbers and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of liked the idea of something that seemed safer and wasn't such a target. And then after that, I got into the whole free software thing. But I tell you, the first experiences I really had of it was SSH and Intelnet and into Linux web servers.
Oh, the people in the late Linux 90s. Web servers, presumably.
Were you a black hat?
I was renting space on them.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
I'll just pretend that you were.
what I think's really cool is the community, I'd say.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's loads of stuff I think is really cool now.
No,
And that is, it's just, what do you think's really good about it? We're not unabashedly fanboyish enough, I don't think.
I think you're right. We're always putting it down. It needs to do this. It doesn't do this. It doesn't do that.
And well,
we're never saying
what's
it
really
does
good
this
about
really
it.
Well.
You can download almost anything.
We take so much for granted.
That's spending a penny.
I know, it's great, isn't it?
Anything you want to do, you can just app get it.
I think it's bloody brilliant myself.
Or Yum Install, of course.
Yeah.
I think for me, the community is without a shadow of a doubt the main thing. I just love every essence of it. Yeah, there's people who piss you off. There's people who are arseholes. But
name some.
No. but, you know...
Jono mouthed something.
you get these sort
Made
of...
Jono resist.
I didn't mouth anything.
You mouthed aid brush.
You get these arseholes in every community. I think the thing that gets me excited is that when a piece of software, particularly is GPL'd, when it becomes GPL'd, it's nice knowing that it'll always be free. There's that confidence that it'll never go away. It's always going to be around for us to use. You know, and that's a real peace of mind thing, I think, in the fact that... And people can do really cool stuff with free software.
The whole idea of it being contributed to a community for other people to be able to use as well, it's just great.
I really get I really get excited about the fact that people can who couldn't ordinarily have access to computers can do stuff with computers.
It's the first time I've had the sense, since being in the Linux world, it's the first time since my Amiga days, since I really feel like using a computer was more than just using a computer.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a bigger need,
isn't
it?
You belong.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And there's a reason behind it.
I love you guys.
Thank you.
Come here!
Come here!
Anyway, so what about you, big man?
Big man.
No, he's done his.
Have I?
Wrong big man.
Which big man are we talking to?
Well, there's only one big man, and he's Ginger.
Yeah. Go on then.
All right, mate, I mean, I really like the fact that it's all free, as I said. I mean, I get quite excited about ethically helping the world and being part of a community. I mean, I think that's great. And you get to write code and other people use it. And they send your emails, go, this doesn't work. But that is really exciting. But I just fucking love the fact that it's all free. I'm sorry, I don't.
Oh, disappointment.
It's incredible, isn't it?
I know. I'm like massively ethically driven. And that's there, absolutely.
Yeah.
But the thing that I really love about it is the fact that I can just go, oh, just get this other machine and I'll drop this CD in, and I'm doing right.
And it's got a
massively inflated sense of moral superiority as I take one Ubuntu disk and install it on four different machines.
It'd be like having your own windmill.
And then you go to pay
your
license fee and
it?
Think, oh, hang on a minute, there ain't no fucking license fee.
I remember when I started Open Advantage. Going
you say
to
windmill?
I'm saying if you had your own windmill to generate electricity,
it'd be really cool.
It'd be something different. It would be giving you free electricity.
It's doing
and
the right
it'd
thing.
Be doing the right thing.
Doing yeah. that. I remember when I started.
Why haven't you got one then?
Because they're about a grand at the moment.
Can't get planning permission.
I haven't got a grand just lying around.
The only reason you haven't got one, the only reason you haven't got a windmill in your back garden
is not Jonathan
because they
Creek.
Cost £1,000.
They cost a lot more than
£1,000. No. There's one by this.
The wind farmy windmills, not
no,
a,
no, no,
not
the
a bloody great big Windy Miller windmill.
The little ones that by made in Scotland from Girders.
Well, are they little ones that you get when you're a kid on the end of a straw?
No, there is one.
It's made out of coloured foil.
There is a domestic wind turbine that you can get from a company called Windsave, and it costs about £1,000.
Is it windsave.com?
I think it's,
so you
yeah.
work for them?
No, but it looks like a good product. Anyway.
Fucking beardsave.com by the sound of it.
Yeah, oh, bringing us slightly back, when I started Open Advantage on the first day, the one thing that I remember thinking was that it's nice.
Jesus, this is what a salary is.
partly was that.
Is this what they call mourning?
Hey, if I come here and don't do any work, I still get paid.
Shut up. It was nice knowing that I was going to work and everyone at Open Advantage was what I considered doing the right thing. They were going to work and helping the open source community to do good things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's a nice thing, you know, is that you can go to a job and feel like you're going to work and you're doing something good. In the same way that I know you guys don't work in open source, but when you get in of an evening and you're doing stuff to do with open source, you're doing the right thing.
Here's a question, right? One, I mean, I know we make a joke of it, but I would love to work for a company like Novell or Red Hat or someone who is doing really good things in the open source world. Why is that? I was trying to think about that on the way here, and I was thinking, is it almost like it's being close to a pop star or something like that for some teeny, you know, why would it be really cool to do that?
It's taking your personal life and moving over into your work life, making the whole of your life about open source.
Make your job your hobby.
Which is a good and a bad thing.
Or make your hobby your job.
Because sometimes you get a bit burnt out. The problem is that you can sometimes get burnt out and then you haven't really got anything to do in your spare time.
And the other problem is if I didn't spend 5 hours every week explaining people why free software was better because they all already got it, what would I do with those 5 hours?
You come out, let's self-righteous.
Smoke a fag and have a cup of tea. 5 hours.
No, you might find other things too. Like, you might find you're a really good painter or something like that. I don't know.
I tried painting today and I was not a very good painter, so I'll try something else.
Or painting a wall or painting a portrait?
It's a little sort of kind of clay picture thing.
Painting the bowl, I suspect.
Question for you guys.
Yeah.
If Microsoft did the thing that they're probably never ever going to do, but if they did, if they open sourced every single product, including their operating system, Office, everything, if they open sourced everything, A, could they survive? Could they compete against Red Hat and the rest of it? Or B, could the rest of them survive? Could Red Hat and Novell, would they still have a marketplace?
Should we assume they're using the GPL just so that...
Yeah, let's assume they use the GPL, yeah.
Because that makes a big difference, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah. No, when I say open source, I mean free.
Okay. Could they survive?
Could they survive, first of
all? Almost certainly after a massive period of convulsion.
Yes.
I reckon.
The idea is, could they build a valid business model?
Would they be as profitable? Probably, well, no well, way.
Let's not forget they've got like nearly 50 billion in the bank, so they could probably
survive, but
they could die a very slow death.
Well, yeah, but the idea of saying would they survive is not just do they live off the money they've got in their pocket, because, you know, they could say our business model is punch people in the face, and they go, how do you make money? They go, it doesn't matter, we've got 50 million in the bank. But that's not really what we're talking about, is it?
No, it is, though. That's essential, because that 50 billion in the bank means that they could dominate open source without ever having to make any money.
Like Ubuntu.
What do you mean? How could they dominate open source without having to make any money?
I think what Matt's trying to say is that they can build up their business, their open source business, without having to worry about breaking even. Yeah.
Like Canonical.
Yes. So they've got a much longer lead time instead of having to be profitable within 6 months or a year.
Do you think the rest of the distros
would
survive?
What was that, Ed?
Do you think the rest of the distros would survive?
What do you mean by survive?
I really think they'd struggle, to be honest.
No, you see, I don't think so, purely because I think a reasonable proportion of people, and I think all the people currently using free software stuff are using it because it's free.
Right.
But I think some of them are using it because they don't actually like Windows very much. I mean, given the choice between Windows and Linux, both of which are open source, I use Linux because I prefer Linux.
Even in the server world, I'd agree with you. But on a desktop, I don't think that the Linux desktop would ever happen.
There are two reasons for it. I mean, the first one is that...
Imagine my surprise.
Yeah, you know, the first one is I think people would choose to use Linux anyway and therefore they would survive. And the second one is inside the open source community.
Yeah.
Microsoft is about as popular as a fucking ice cream salesman on the day it rains shite.
Yeah, but it doesn't...
So if they open source all of their products...
What kind of analogy is that?
Isn't that what everybody hates about them? They're not open source.
No.
And the way they got to where they are as well.
I think that's one aspect. Here's a case in point.
A lot of people hate Linspire, but they're not at all evil from what they say. So think of Microsoft, who are generally perceived to be evil, very, very evil. Even if they did the least evil thing in the world and became open source and everything, people would still hate them.
So you think all the distros would survive?
Not all of them.
I don't think it would make... I mean, you remember how you said Linus Torvalds wouldn't really have anything to say to Bill Gates?
Yes.
I wonder if it would be roughly the same, whether it would particularly affect...
There will certainly be people like that, I think.
Yeah, but the thing is, you wouldn't see local councils, I bet you, switching all their desktops to Linux if they could get an open source window.
Absolutely.
I think it depends.
Staff costs are less.
I think it depends on how important you think that open source, the fact that it's open source, is to Microsoft. I'd say that software is one part of Microsoft, but where they really make a lot of wins is the fact that their relationship with their partners and their customers is really good. To be fair to them, they have a good relationship with their partners and their customers, which you don't tend to get, from what I can gather, in the current crop of open source companies.
Can I just ask, when you say they've got a good relationship with partners, do you mean like the OEMs?
Yeah.
Because the only reason I question that is because I thought they had a really bad relationship with them in that other than Windows on there and we'll fuck you over.
It's what I'm talking about is not so much OEMs in terms of, not so much OEMs, but more to do with people who are official Microsoft partners and will do work for clients sort of thing.
Yep, yep.
And Microsoft have a good relationship with these people, which means that they've got a good relationship with the people who help spread the word about Microsoft.
Yep.
I think the other thing is that for Microsoft to be successful as an open source company, they need to understand open source, and they don't understand open source.
Yeah, but as you say, they've got $50 billion.
But imagine,
money can't buy you understanding in the same way that it can't buy you happiness.
Imagine for a second they flipped the switch and they went open source today.
Yep.
Right? They'd need to understand about open source and open source communities and how to make the most out of those for them to be successful.
Absolutely.
And I suspect they'd approach it from the perspective of what the cynics say about Linspire. Like, just smashing it with a massive hammer, whereas, as we've spoken to Kevin Carmody...
Undoubtedly they'd do it that way, yeah.
You know,
that's what they've done with everything.
Linspire aren't necessarily doing that, but I suspect Microsoft would do that. And
I suspect you're right.
I'd love to believe, and I think internally Microsoft people do believe, that they've got massive dominance because they're actually the best. You know, people say, Microsoft, it's all lock-in and stuff like that. But inside Microsoft, whether it's actually the case or not, I'm not going to enter into, but certainly inside Microsoft, I think they genuinely believe, and they've got a reasonable case, they believe they're the best. And therefore, it would be interesting to see how many people are actually locked in and would take the opportunity to move away and how many people choose Windows because they don't.
But them open sourcing everything wouldn't make people move away. It's more likely to get people to move back.
Well, possibly and possibly not. The point is, if people would like to currently move to Linux,
yeah,
but they can't because they've got loads of Word documents and nothing else can read them.
Right.
As soon as they open source Word, people can work out how the Word format works. Bang, switch.
Yeah.
If they want to switch. Now, does the Microsoft people believe that there aren't that many people in that position. There aren't that many people who are locked in.
But even if
people are choosing Word because it's
loads
better.
Even if Microsoft
don't think that.
Even if Microsoft decided to go open source, they're going to push their technology in a very even if they went open source, their technology is still going to be very Microsoft. It's going to be very much the thing that we've seen so far, except it's going to be open source and there might be extra shit in there from the open source community.
Yeah.
And I think people like that. Certain people, if you're a Microsoft person, if you're a Microsoft shop, you like that. There's a lot of people out there who love using Microsoft.
Yeah.
But we don't tend to see a lot of it because we're, I suppose, somewhat insulated in our community.
Really? Yeah.
And
we read OS News and don't listen to .NET Rocks.
Yeah, so we have an assumption that people immediately want to move away from Microsoft, whereas there's a lot of people, I think, just love Microsoft technology and they don't want to move over to Linux in the same way that we love Linux. And
I know
open
guys, though, who are .NET developers and have been Windows developers for years and they make their living through that. And they run Windows exclusively everywhere, but they hate Microsoft.
Right.
Because because they see them as just being buffoons. Not because they think that they're evil or anything like that. They just think, all that development resource and they're fucked up yet again. You know, that sort of thing.
Right.
They sort of become world weary of them, which has turned into a intense dislike.
I suppose I think you get that with a lot of companies because I've heard about that from a lot with, I know Patrick Finch will kill us, but apparently that's the case with Sun quite a lot as well.
Really,
people love Sun technology, but they sometimes don't like Sun themselves so much.
But you get that a lot with Ford. You know, people buy a car that isn't a Ford, but on the other hand, they think, Ford, just why can't they just put it together? People think about the England football team. You know,
1-1.
So to summarise, then, you think that they would definitely survive? Although they'd lose a lot of money.
I don't think that much would change, to be honest.
No, I mean,
you think that all the distros would all survive, or there'd be a few casualties, or there'd be like wipeout?
I think there might be a few casualties in the distros, but not majorly, because I think a large portion of the people who are using Linux now will continue to use Linux even after the switch.
It'd be people like Mepis who'd disappear, I think.
Yeah.
People are trying to make a commercial Linux.
I think.
Do you think it should happen?
I don't know.
That's the big question, isn't it?
Yes. Would you like it to happen?
I can't see Microsoft's motive doing it.
Would you like it to happen?
Me specifically, would I like it to happen? Yes.
Oh, really?
I would do, yeah. I mean, I live in fear of it happening.
Okay.
In the same way that Colombian drug barons live in fear that everyone's going to make cocaine legal.
Yeah, yeah.
At which point, suddenly, their business model goes away. And I worry that if we did it, Linux would lose. I mean, I worry that I might be wrong and it would wipe out Linux entirely. But on the other hand, the world would be free software at that point.
Yeah, that's
A lot of my qualms...
None of us would change. We'd all run Linux, I'm quite sure.
Yeah.
But a lot
of my qualms Microsoft will go away if they can't leverage their monopoly and they can't...
Surely the...
Do you want it to happen, Johnny?
Should it happen? I'd say... I'd like it to happen because it's more free software.
But are you just doing that because you're an open source evangelist? Or do you think that would be a good thing for the whole community?
I think it would be a good thing, but a lot of people ask Microsoft, when are you going to open source Office?
Yeah.
Or not open source Office, are you going to run Office on Linux? And I think that a commercial Microsoft software on Linux would in some ways be a bad thing, because that would move people away from open source software on Linux.
Different to the question.
But in terms of open source Microsoft software, I think that's a good thing. And it would make a more competitive marketplace.
Do you think it would?
I think people buy software because of functionality. I don't think they necessarily buy it so much because it's open source.
What about you, Matt? Should it happen?
Do you want it to happen? I don't know. I mean, I like to be an optimist, and I'd like to think that it would be a good thing and that Microsoft would be a responsible member of the open source community. But you just look at the track record
but you're not supposed to judge them on
embrace
the track record,
and extend.
Remember.
True, but you look at embrace and extend.
Didn't
and all
they say
that sort
judge
of
us on what we're doing now or something ridiculous? And then,
true. But you know, I can only look at with pension funds.
Absolutely.
You can only look at the past performance.
Yeah,
and I just think that they would use the GPL-ness of their new software to their advantage in such a way that could be detrimental to the rest of
that. That's my concern
of the open source world.
Mr. Oh, you've been asked, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
So, forums people.
Baldman.
Oh, yeah,
what do you think?
I don't know. Part of you sort of instantly wants to say, yeah, I need it to happen really soon, but I don't know. I'm scared if it happened. I'd be really scared. Like,
yeah, I'd be scared that Linux would go away in favour of Windows, but it'd be an open source Windows.
And it, Linux would never but go would the, away. It would just be
it wouldn't for us.
Lessened.
Yeah. But it would be much reduced.
Linux would get better as well, because there'd be loads, large chunks of Windows will come into Linux, which would be a good thing. The good chunks of Linux, would it? No, in the same way
not,
that...
Not necessarily. In the same way that the Abbey Word people can't just rob OpenOffice's Word importer.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, they can at least look at it and know roughly how it works.
I agree.
It would probably help the Samba project quite
you could
a bit,
write to NTFS shares, but... The thing is, it would never happen because of all the patents. I mean, Microsoft just have to open all their patents.
Well, that's
as well.
The final question. Do we think it's going to happen?
No way. There's absolutely no reason for Microsoft to do that right now.
Well, not necessarily all of their stuff, but do you think Microsoft are going to put
embrace open source
they will
in
make,
any
significant embrace,
way?
Yeah, in any
they've already
open
sourced
nods.
One thing, haven't they?
Hey?
They've already open sourced
Yeah, the MSI, whatever
They will
it was.
Make
yeah,
nods Wix. Towards openness, I think.
Yeah, they wrote a Firefox plugin. Did I mention this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course it does.
Oh, it's for like the genuine Windows Advantage thing where you right. verify your version of Windows. Yeah. You used to be able to only
is it not like that new thing that people are going on about at the moment where you put it on your website and it means that Explorer users can't use it?
Yeah.
Like the equivalent of that.
Explorer Destroyer.
Yeah.
I think the important... assume we're all right and it wouldn't significantly change the landscape. The only thing that changed is suddenly Microsoft will go from being a company who makes a shitload of money to a company who makes some money.
I think you can't
And
really...
I can't imagine what the hell their motive would be to go, we're going to voluntarily make less money.
Linux would have to almost win first.
I don't think
before
it would
they did it.
Not significantly change the landscape. I think it would dramatically change the landscape.
Why? But why is open sourcing Microsoft technology that big a deal?
It's a huge deal.
Why though?
Why?
It's functionality that people are interested in.
I mean,
in.
Changing the landscape people means a significant amount of people would move from one to the other. For example, or would move away from all of them, or would run some kind of combined thing or something. But if roughly all the people who are currently using Windows stick with Windows, and roughly all the people who are currently using Linux don't like Windows anyway, and therefore stick with Linux, how does it change the landscape to the fact that you can read the Microsoft source code? When Microsoft went shared source, so some other people could read the source, it's not open in any way, but when some other people could read the source code, didn't dramatically change the landscape, did it?
True, I guess.
A closer to home thing is, there's some speculation at the moment that Schwartz is going to announce an open source Java on May the 13th at the Java 1 conference, something like
Java
that.
Java 1, yeah.
Now,
juicy.
Now, do we think that that will... You know, that's
happen.
A lot closer to
no.
home. Is that going to dramatically change the landscape just because...
No, but it's a good thing.
You know, is that going to dramatically
but
change
the landscape? Java isn't a completely dominant technology, though.
See,
but
weirdly, I
it's
think
not
that
dominant.
That would actually change the landscape more than an open source Windows. Because I think there are a lot of people who would like to be using J2EE and don't want to. Because it's a pain in the arse, or you can't easily get it on Debian platforms or Linux platforms, for example, without a bit of faffing.
Yeah.
So, let us know, forums people, what you think. Send us your emails.
Sherlockradio.org.
Oh.
Great. End of the show, so let's crack straight on with the emails.
Should we crack straight on?
As opposed to cracking slightly wonky on.
a latent crack.
Shall I start?
Oh, if you want to.
Oh,
the Ravel jumps in.
Oh my God.
Dave Wickham, the Wanderer, has a purchasing tip for us.
Wickham, Wickham, Wild, Wild West.
Yep.
Jim West. Desperado.
Who's Jim West?
Never mind.
He's wild.
I'll just leave it at this. If you go to tinyurl.com/OCM9V, he says, it's a shame they don't make it in Ginger. Have a look at that.
If you've got children present, you might not want to go to that website.
It's very much NSFW.
That's it, NSFW, yeah.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Nazis suck for victory. Not safe for work.
Not safe for work.
Nazis suck for victory.
Didn't see that on any bloody recruiting posters, did you? No. Or strength through joy on all of them.
More on Axe pro-Nazi opinions later.
Hi. Bald man, speak
for
your email.
Counterclockwise.
Right. No, we're going anti-clockwise.
Okay,
Widdershins rather than turnwise.
Blink. Okay, Garrett writes it.
Who?
Garrett. And I can't pronounce his surname.
Oh,
I won't
Garrett.
Even try, especially with a cold.
Try it.
Nah.
Garrett.
Howdy all from the Commonwealth of Virginia, named after one of your queens.
Which one? The Virgin?
The Virgin Queen. Elizabeth.
Dale Winton.
I've got a basic Lug Radio question. When jogging, I listen to Lug Radio on my OG player. I hear URLs thrown about, but I can't click on sounds yet. When I get home,
I'm about to
a device
that
supports
here,
hyperlinking. I try and find those URLs in the episode information on lugradio.org, but I can't find them.
What's up
with that? Mr. Information
Perhaps if he
Architect,
wants, if
what
he
is
wants
up with
to
that?
Contribute that to the community, then he can sit there and
he can do the show notes.
The major reason I don't do it is because I write the show notes in bits on the train and while listening to bits of the show and some from memory and so on. And I don't listen to the whole show while I'm writing the notes.
Okay.
So I don't necessarily pick up on every single URL. I try to link things where if the subject of a segment is about a particular piece of software, I'll link to it. But if someone just mentions a URL, I won't often pick it up on a re-listen.
You know, the people who used to transpose the whole thing.
The transcript thing would be a brilliant way of solving this if people were still doing the transcriptions, but it's such hard work.
Or maybe if they just did the transcription of the URLs, that would be a start.
It's just incredibly dull work.
It's incredibly dull and tedious and long work, yes.
Yeah.
Which is why people aren't doing it.
Yeah. Well, they don't have to do the whole transcript. They could just send the URLs. And we could put them on a show notes
just put page. Just put them on the wiki.
On the wiki.
Would be the easiest thing.
Okay, yeah.
Isn't this what Google's for?
Well, no. Or the rewind button.
Well, some podcasts actually have show notes with clickable links in.
Really? I mean, I can understand. Yes, really. I can understand specific links to specific individual pages that you might not be able to easily find. But if someone wants,
it's not much to ask,
eh?
Said he volunteering himself.
Who doesn't do anything to do with releasing Lugradio. Would you like to contribute?
What's in your hand,
Johnny? Eh? Oh, Aid prints the emails once.
What? What? Not the point.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to do it, but we tend to get the release happen at about 10:30 on a Monday morning and I'm at work, so I can't blow off an hour and a half and listen to Lugradio.
Yeah.
You said blow off.
Anyway.
Bacon, read an email.
We've had an email from Magnus Thurnin.
Nice one.
And his subject is...
Again.
His subject is Nothing's Black and White. And he says, hi, just did some catching up and listened to episode 10. Great show, but I'd really like to clarify something. When talking about 3D graphics and proprietary drivers, one of you, that was Ack, said, Nothing's Black and White. Okay? And he says, I'd like to hear some grey sides on the following subjects. Two subjects in particular. One is frameworks.
Okay, grey sides on frameworks. I think we've all said frameworks are bad.
Yes.
But on the other hand, lots of stuff is a framework. Like the X API, Xlib,
yes,
is a framework. And if you don't have things like that, you can't do anything. You have to have some consistency.
So there's grey.
You have to export some APIs, yes.
Right, so there's grey. Second one is child pornography.
Child pornography. Right, thanks. So so essentially what you're suggesting is I have put myself in a position where I'm prepared to defend child pornography, which I'm not going to do on air, I have to say.
Or he's talking to you, Magnus, not me. So okay, so so what you're saying that there are elements of grey?
Yeah.
I would say so, yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah.
So when you said nothing's black and white,
generalisation, isn't it?
I think, Magnus, you may be reading a little bit too much into...
Hang on, I said nothing is... There's nothing black and white.
Eh? You said nothing.
I'm trying to decide whether I'm in favour of my view or against it. I'm confused.
Can you remember which one it was?
Did I say...
I think you said...
Did I say everything's black and white?
You said nothing... He said here that you said nothing's black and white.
Well, that sounds reasonable.
But that's right. That means that I was admitting there are shades of grey to everything.
Hang on a second.
Which I've just defended, isn't it? Plus, that doesn't sound like the sort of thing I'd say at all.
No, I think Magnus might have got this wrong, to be honest. I think you probably said... Of course it's black and white.
Right, sorry, excuse me, rewind 10 seconds. Frameworks are shite. They're nothing but shite. They're always shite. There is no shades of grey. They're shite.
So do you believe that there's shades of grey?
I believe there are shades of grey in a lot of things, yes.
Right, okay. So
I think there are some things which it is possible to be entirely dogmatic about.
He says, so looking forward... he says, so, looking forward to your...
that's different.
It is a little bit. So, looking forward to your intelligent, in quotes, answers.
Well, I'm sorry if they don't count as intelligent.
Magnus, get back to Iceland.
Magnus.
And just as punishment for that, Magnus Thurnin, you sent us a really big long email, which I thought was quite interesting, but now I'm not going to read it out, because you were mean to me about it. So instead, I'm going to read an email from OKF. OKF at mailshack.com.
You're not meant to read that as email address.
Well, that doesn't sound like the sort of email address which is your permanent email address to me. That sounds like a throwaway one-liner.
I think we'll bleep that out later.
No, we won't.
Okay.
We might bleep it out.
He says...
wait and see.
One of you guys mentioned you like web email because you can check it anywhere. Here in the States, most ISPs let you have a POP3 account as well as log in from the web, so no need for crap like Hotmail. No, the point was that you don't have to download an email client and then point it at your POP server.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean... yes, you here everywhere else, most ISPs let you have a pop to the account as well as log in from the web. And if they don't, you can just forward an email to Gmail and pop it off of there if you want to. The point was that you don't have to download a mail client whenever you walk up to any random computer.
And also, if I want to just extend in what he's talking about, or she, if I switch ISPs, I don't want to have to give up my email address.
That's the worst thing about ISP email, isn't it? Is the fact you've got to do all of that shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas that's, I think that's why a lot of people moved over to things like, I mean, that's why I started using Yahoo as an example. So I started when you know, you had to spend a lot of money on a domain, and it, you know, moving from one domain to another was a right old pain in the arse. So,
you see, I mean, I paid out the money for a domain because I thought, right, I'm sick of.
When did you get your first domain name?
Yeah.
A while ago. No, it wasn't. It wasn't that long ago. 2001, something like that.
Did you have an interest in freezing eyes?
Got my first one 1999.
Really?
Sorry, paid 100 quid for a .uk, I think.
Actually,
it was.
Yeah, I think I had mine.
Just to continue with OKF's email, it says, you guys always rag on the Macs and how there is no reason to run Linux on them. I don't believe you've ever said there's no reason to run Linux on a Mac.
No,
There's loads of reasons to run Linux on a Mac, like it's not macOS.
There's no point in buying one just to run Linux
on
it.
But he says, I run all three OSes, Mac, Linux, and Windows. I like Mac better than Windows, but I like Linux best. I run Yellow Dog Linux on my Mac, and through MOL, Mac on Linux, I can run OSX apps with Yellow Dog Linux natively with no emulation. This is possible because of Linux running on PPC architecture on the Mac. So, I assume it's something like VMware, is it?
What?
Mac on Linux.
No.
No, it's just like, Wine.
Oh, it's like Wine?
I think so.
So it's an emulation of the OSX API?
Why is he running Mac on Linux when he's already got Mac on his machine?
When he's got Mac on a Mac.
Yeah.
He could be running Mac on Mac.
Why run Mac on Linux on a Mac?
He says, I don't even need OSX installed and I can run all OSX apps in Linux without a problem. The idea is that you can't run Linux apps on the Mac OS.
But
you can run Mac apps.
If you can run Mac OS X
On Linux. So you want an app to come up in the same way that what's the point in having Wine when you can just like dual boot and reboot into Windows?
But
the answer is you can run them both in the same environment.
No, the point I'm saying is that, exactly that. Why have Mac OS X on his machine if he can run Mac OS X in Linux?
I don't think he has.
I thought he said that he had all three on his machine.
He says,
rantings of a madman?
I'm a bit confused here. He says, I run all three OSes.
Yeah.
But then later on he says, I don't even need OSX installed, and I can run all OSX apps in Linux without a problem.
The man's obviously smoked the crack pipe.
Presumably when he says, I don't even need OSX installed, but I have it installed anyway, because even though I don't need it. I'm a bit confused now. But thank you very much. Ah, Mike from the USA. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Cheers, Mike from USA. Hey!
Hey!
Shut the book truck.
Shut the book truck.
Shut the fuck up, book truck.
Well, I've got one from Io Null, who says, Hi, guys. I am Io Null from Solihull, which is a place near here. He says, I've been listening to the show for about 6 months. Love it, blah, blah, blah. Very surprised to find people with the same views as him living so close. He says, right.
Matt. You've just moved two pieces of paper. Is that a really long email? Oh, right. Carry on.
He says, anyway, I am emailing you guys because of a problem at my secondary school.
Bear with me. The piece of paper that Matt has just shown Jono is the tiny URL he mentioned earlier.
Ah!
With a woman who looks a bit like an actress.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, interesting. Anyway.
Protuberant.
That's tinyurl.com/OCM9V. Anyway, I'm emailing you guys because of a problem at my school. The school computers run Windows NT Workstation 4 on PowerMate VTs. Okay, great, fine.
Coffee Mate.
Basically, his school are running very old PCs with very old Windows. And he suggested to them they should be running Linux or BSD because that would be faster, more reliable, and would introduce people to the philosophy behind the open source movement. Now, I think the problem he's got there, he says no success. And he wants our comments and suggestions on what we think he should do. I think part of the problem he's got there is he thinks his school would give a shit about the open source movement. I think, but it is a very good question. What can he do? Personally, I think not a lot unless he's got a teacher there who gives a damn.
I think if he's tried, I don't want to say just give up, mate, you know, you've lost the war. But he's tried introducing it to them and nobody cares.
He's burnt a copy of Edge Ubuntu and OpenOffice.
Sorry, recap what he's done so far.
Right, he's burnt a copy of Edge Ubuntu. He's tried to explain the reasons, such as it would make the machines run better,
right.
It's more secure, and he also wants, he thinks it'd be useful to introduce the philosophy of open source to his
He's doing this to his teachers or his IT
people?
Yeah,
to his teachers.
You see, I'd say the very first thing you should do is get them to run Firefox. Because the thing is, as was outlined in the advocacy talk, if you say to people, these are the reasons why you should be using open source, if they can't experience those benefits without with basically no effort, then they ain't going to move. Installing an Edubuntu is a massive undertaking for somebody who has never used Linux before. Whereas switching to Firefox, you get an immediate win, and then you then associate a good experience with open source, and that will make you more open to moving over to possibly OpenOffice.
He does say that he's tried OpenOffice with them, but what I'd say to him is don't sell them on the open sourcing, because really schools these days are just training centers for the workplace. If it, you know, until the workplace is using OpenOffice, they won't give a damn.
Ah, it's chicken and egg.
So sell them on the, well, not so much. Sell them on the benefits of using the software. Like you say, Firefox is a better browser. It's more secure.
There's a massive amount of miseducation in schools, and the fact that a lot of school admins think that if they can't find an open source replacement for something like Sims, which is a school management system,
PARS or whatever,
then they. Basically, if they can't find a replacement for that, then there's no point moving over to anything else. Whereas you can actually run Sims and loads of other stuff side by side, you know. And there are open source efforts to make a replacement for Sims, one of which is going on locally.
Oh, yeah. Really?
And school tool was a similar sort of thing.
Yes, it was. I mean, like you say, I mean, introduce them, first of all, instead of saying switch to Ubuntu immediately or Edubuntu or whatever, try switching some of the applications that are already there on to open source applications. It sounds like he's not getting a lot of pushback from them saying, we're not doing this for these reasons. He's just dying under the weight of crushing indifference.
I'd also say to him, try not to be too earnest about it. Try not to seem like the kid who knows better than the teachers.
Don't become the nutter.
Yeah, and just get on their side, you know, get them on your side as well. Don't try and be... You know, don't be the greasy-haired kid who everyone hates.
It's definitely a step-by-step process.
What you might want to do is try taking something like portable Firefox on a USB keyring and then showing other pupils it that it's better.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to get the teachers to enforce it on all the pupils all at once.
That sounds like a dangerous strategy.
Part of the problem with a lot of
Why is it...
Just because I know what schools are like with their computers.
What do you mean?
Well, if you go around saying, oh, look at this on my keyring.
Oh, no, sorry, no. He says that the USB ports have been blocked, so you couldn't do that anyway. So, forget that.
I'd say part of the problem with a lot of...
It's NT4. USB's not going to work, is it?
Oh, well, okay.
I'd say part of the problem with a lot of advocacy is that people try and move people over with fact sheets.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work. Whereas people need to, like you said, people need to get an immediate win with no effort. When they get that, they assume that open source is a good thing, or at least it starts growing that seed in their brain.
I think it's great that people are trying to do this in schools.
Yeah, it is great.
And if you're blogging about this,
let
me put you on Planet Advocacy, because we need people like you on Planet Advocacy. So.
And also, try and Google for some other people who are doing the same sort of thing in schools.
Yes.
And see if you can get some encouragement for them. But just try not to be too earnest.
What a great email, eh?
Yeah, he does say one last thing. He says,
you all suck.
No, he says... Our show has inspired him to do a teenage Linux show. You can go to podcastincubator.com/TTR. And he does ask if he can get a free ticket to Lug Radio Live because he's 15 and blah, blah, blah. And he's not international, so no.
No.
He can have a concession. He can have a concession for three quid.
I'm sure you can save your pocket money and you know, stop buying chips for a couple of days.
Yeah, stop buying drugs.
Stop buying hash and spend that under Lug Radio Live ticket. Carry on, Aid.
Gregory writes from California.
California!
He says, Lug Radio is the best Linux / FOSS podcast out there, period.
Lug Radio.
Why is it that most Linux podcasts seem to model themselves on a Howard Stern show? I just finished listening to...
If they did, I'd listen to them.
Series 3, Episode 14.
Hang on, I don't know what the Howard
Stern
show is.
I hope Ted Hagar will be a permanent feature. Can we fly him over once every 2 weeks?
Yeah, he's permanently in a different continent.
It's nice, totally not on the show.
Feature in his life.
He goes on to say, it's nice to hear somebody who can speak proper English.
Ah, oh, plus bugger off, by the way.
And then he says, by the way, what's a boffin?
Ah,
it's what you get behind the bike sheds.
That'll confuse him. Yeah. Well, we're glad people like
have a look
Ted.
On Wikipedia
like
for boffin.
I think we need to explain the now two definitions of the word boffin. The actual definition is a clever person. A clever person is a boffin. Matt, explain.
If it, Well, I mean, to boff is a verb.
Which we could have a boff session.
I mean, it could be to pass wind, but it could also be to get a good rogering.
Boffing?
It's
passing
just,
wind.
I have just boffed.
You see, when I was at school, if you boffed, you puked. That was puking boff. As well.
Really?
Yeah, a Bedfordian thing.
I remember when this girl puked in assembly once, and it just went from past me here. It was amazing.
Really? Oh, nice. Projectile vomiting in assembly. Yeah. Did a head start spinning round as well, like Linda Blair in The Exorcist?
Yes, that's what happened.
Okay, I've had an email from... Well, we've had an email from Bitey. Okay.
Is his real name Mark?
Is he like Ice-T's brother?
I'm assuming his name's not Bitey Concession, and that the subject's actually Concession. He says,
Alex means
although,
subject.
Although presumably he'd be writing in saying, hard luck Concession, because my name's Bitey Concession.
Or maybe it's just an advert for anti-coffee people.
Anyway, he sent us an email saying, how do, guys? It's from the north, he said.
All right.
He says, in the interest of making a prat of my mate, of a mate, and being a tight, but not in the gay way, northerner, thanks for that, I thought I might try my luck at getting a concession ticket with a little story. He says, me and my mate, Nige...
Never a good sign.
Nige! Me and my mate, Nige, who's also known as Leroy, says...
Why? You're not Leroy out of fun.
Me and my
name's Nige. You wouldn't be known as Leroy, wouldn't you?
Him and his mate, Nige Leroy, geek out a few times a week when the women let them to work on various projects that they work on. Over the past...
Are we deliberately avoiding naming their projects?
It was difficult transcribing that sentence.
It's one of that thing that I mentioned.
It was difficult transcribing that sentence into a different tense as I was reading it. Over the past few weeks, we've been putting together a media server as a back-end storage solution for my modified XBMC front-end. XBMC?
That was not a fucking gibberish. Oh, the Xbox Media Center.
Ah, right, okay.
Oh, well, I know about that.
To cut a long story short, we went through three motherboards, and the thing would not post. And it was decided by Nige, after a few cans of beer...
Leroy.
That we needed a battered sausage. Right. Now, to our American listeners, a battered sausage is a sausage that has got batter around it.
It's a foodstuff.
Clue was in the question, really. It's
a foodstuff much like a faggot.
It's not much like a faggot.
No, nothing like a faggot.
In that a faggot is a foodstuff, so is a battered sausage.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's like a sausage. Presumably you know what a sausage is. And then you get batter around it, then you deep fry it.
Yeah, it's not some kind of description.
Sausage tempura.
It's the fucking breakfast of champions for our American listeners.
Sausage tempura?
Yeah.
Is that like a French battered sausage or something?
Sausage. Like tempura on a sausage, you wouldn't taste very nice.
Yes, a battered sausage is indeed the one thing you should not be without when building a 20 HHD media server to get the thing working.
How do they get through three motherboards?
Don't know.
Anyway,
how did they think? I know what we're missing. A bad sausage. Where else did they try?
Alcohol was involved before
they discovered that they needed the battered sausage.
He said, "Off we went on a mission to find a battered sausage at the many fine eateries in Bradford."
I bet that didn't take long.
Fine eateries in Bradford.
Bradford.
When it occurred to me. It might be comedy to get Nige to ask for said item of food in a comedy fashion, and thus was born the legend of Leroy and the battered sausage.
Surely anything said in a Bradford accent is comedy.
These two have to be coming to Lug Radio Live, surely.
After promising I would never let anyone else hear it, I thought, fuck it, life's too short and too funny, and it might swing me a cheap ticket to the live show, so here you go. Enjoy. So thanks very much. You will get a concessionary ticket, and... it has to be pointed out that Bitey attached a particular sound clip to this...
he did. Come on, let's hear it.
Shall we hear it? Hang on.
Batten sausage!
Brilliant.
Well, thanks for that. Random, I think, is the best word to describe it.
Let's avoid Bradford.
He finishes off by just saying, if that does not do it, though, think if the fact I'm supposed to be saving for a new kitchen... and to get married, but instead spending money on hotels and tickets to come up and hang out at Lug Radio Live and hopefully avoid the fucking World Cup summer hysteria. Incidentally, lots of people have been emailing us saying they want to come to Lug Radio Live and looking forward to avoiding the World Cup.
Good on them.
Right. So, nice that we're more popular than the biggest football competition the world has ever seen.
Yeah.
Excellent.
That's what we like. So,
football
is that everything, is it?
Football's not suck.
That's it, we're done.
Pretty much.
Football does suck.
Who do you support, though?
It really does.
Liverpool.
You like football... when you decide you like football.
Well, yeah.
And then you don't it at other times.
That's not true. I never say I don't like it. I'm not the most rabid follower of football, I admit.
You're not a follower of football.
He's a dedicated follower of football.
Oh,
yes, he is.
Oh, yes, he is.
Anyway, have we got stuff we need to do? Not really.
Yeah. Nah, bolster.
Cheers,